This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising?
People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience?
Visit stateofaudio.com to see Odyssey's State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative.
Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry. And get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
Seven in a row for the Pistons. Doing my Jalen Duren impression in the studio here. Seven fingers up. The Pistons keep winning. We'll start with them. Good morning, Jim Costa, John Jansen, Heather Park, Gov and Greg behind the glass. A lot to do today, John. Good morning.
It'll be nice when we can get to a point where the runs that they go on, we're not comparing it to the last time they did this, which is more than a decade ago.
Right.
Okay, that's where the Pistons are right now, but it's been a fun run. Yesterday, finally a good win against a good team. And you could say Atlanta, all right, it's kind of a like, they're a little bit behind them in the standings, but the Clippers, that was a good win. And now there's a couple of big tests on the horizon. It'll be fun to watch the next couple of games. Obviously, Wednesday night they play Boston, and it is a... Let's see what you got. Let's see who you are against the big boys. Cade Cunningham. This is a spotlight game.
And they're home games.
Yeah.
Boston and Denver coming up this week. So you have this question, just how good are these Pistons, right? And we will know at the end of this week just how good these Pistons are. But if I ask you that question beforehand, what's your answer this morning? What's the ceiling for this basketball team, John? Let me give you some context here.
Okay.
In the last 30 games, they're 21-9. That's a 70% win percentage. Only Boston, Cleveland, and OKC have played better basketball this season than what the Pistons have done for basically 2 months now. What's the ceiling?
Well, I think the ceiling is, and I'm not predicting that they win a playoff series, but I think the ceiling is they get a series win in round one, and we have a little bit of fun. We have some excitement. We have something to cheer about in the postseason for the Pistons. And at the very least, I think they make the first round exciting. The ceiling is a series win. I don't want to say there's no chance, but there's minimal chance that they win two playoff series.
Playoffs are a different animal. It does get ratcheted up. I agree with you, though. I think the ceiling would be winning a playoff series. I think they'd match up really well with the Knicks, who have not played well against good teams all season long, and Detroit has beaten them a couple times in Madison Square Garden. I think they could win a playoff series. I do. What I'm seeing from Cade Cunningham feels real, and it's not just Cade. Did you see Isaiah Thompson's block last night, trailing?
So
he's all over the floor.
The way that they have played defense, and that might be the one thing that we haven't talked about. Jalen Duren, I know we talk about his rebounds, and he had a bunch of them last night, but his ability to defend the rim, his ability to, and Isaiah Thompson, like, it's their defense has probably been what has taken the biggest jump outside of Cade being a star.
The Pistons, after the win last night, are closer to hosting home court in the playoffs than they are the play-in tournament.
Yeah, they're one back. One back. And so the same amount of wins, but two more losses.
So we ask you, dare to dream. Like, what's the ceiling of this team? 248-539-9797.
You know, I think I'd love to see what Cade looks like in one of these seven-game series because I think he's competitive. I think he's playing confident right now. He's diving for loose balls. Bickerstaff after the game going, boy, this is everything you'd want out of your leader.
And here's what excites me about tomorrow night. And, you know, when they played Cleveland back early February, Cade had 38. They lost by 3. I don't know what that means in regards to the translation to playing against Boston. Mm-hmm. Right now, Cleveland is a better team than Boston.
But Boston's the reigning champs.
Yes, they are.
And we know
and they've got a number of different players that can hurt you in so many different ways. And the experience. But in the last two games, it's been 38 and 32 by Cade. Against Cleveland, it was 38 that Cade had. I want to see him go from star to we could have the conversation of him being a superstar. Some of that can happen Wednesday night.
Yeah, he enters that conversation. Look, I think you're right. If they were to win a playoff series, they likely get bounced by Boston or Cleveland, who they'd face in the second round. But I don't think that they're necessarily a one-and-done team. With how they've played now, even post-Jaden Ivey, I think they're 18-8. The way they've played now for a considerable stretch, yeah, I think they're a team that could make a little noise when they get in the playoffs. They're a team. How about this? You don't want to play the Pistons in the first round. If you're Milwaukee, if you're the Pacers, if you're the Knicks, not saying you can't beat the Pistons, but you don't want to face them right now. They will defend, and they'll throw bodies at you. Stewart and Durin and Thompson are all good defenders right now. And Cade's guy, I think his defense gets slept on. He tries on that end of the floor.
And here's why tomorrow night is so important. You look at their losses. Their losses have been against Indiana, Cleveland, Indiana again, Cleveland again. But their wins have all come against teams like Philly, Charlotte, Chicago twice, San Antonio. And so this is a way for them, and whether it's Boston or it's Denver, for them to not just wake up everybody here in Detroit or in the Midwest or in the Eastern Conference, but to wake up everybody coast to coast as to what the Pistons are becoming.
If they split one of the next two, I think you'll feel really good.
Oh, hell yeah. A win over Boston or a win over Denver, that's going to make you feel really good.
I wonder what the crowds are going to be like, because I just know what it's like doing this show where we have some Pistons fans, but we fight the battle with people who are just checked out on the NBA or just they had been burned out on the Pistons for so long. I'm curious to see what the crowds are going to look like this week.
What they'll look like, what they'll feel like, what they'll sound like, because when was the last time there was a game in a buildup against a Boston or a Denver where you're like, you know what? It's not likely that they win either game.
Nope.
But it's also not likely that they're going to get just curb stomped.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
I just don't see that happening. In any of the last, 7 years, 8 years, you're looking at it going, this is not an entertaining game because while they may be able to keep it close and they'll have a lead at 15-14, then all of a sudden, boom, the other team just makes a run and it's a no doubter in the opposite way. In the middle of the third quarter, even going into the second half.
Well, that's a caveat I wanted to put. Sometimes NBA games can just start to really get out of hand. I don't think the Pistons are going to be in some big hole early. I think they're going to fight. And if the score looks ugly in the fourth quarter because one of these teams just turns it up a notch, all right. I mean, I'm not ruling that out. But I think they're going to enter these games at home with some buzz, playing well, and giving their best shot.
Yeah, and I just think it's going to be fun. I'm excited about it.
The biggest Pistons home game, and you fill in the blank there.
Yeah, in I mean, if you got a son or a daughter that's 10 years old,
their life,
yeah, or even 16 years old, right? You know, they're not understanding of what is going on. This is the opportunity to save a generation of Pistons fans, and it's not all resting on one game, but that's what this team is doing. They are revitalizing the fandom of Pistons fans for moms, dads, grandmas, grandpas that have been Pistons fans, and they remember And you see all of these things on Instagram and social media, you know, teams that have won a championship in the 2000s. And the Pistons are one of those teams. Yep. But you would hardly remember it, and you would hardly know it. If you were a young fan, you wouldn't have any idea that they were a good team.
Yeah, I mean, I was 11 years old. I mean, it's been a while.
You're right on the verge.
I know, right? If not for that team, I mean, those are the memories that hook you when you're growing up, is if you have a team like that. A couple ticket texts, 248-539-9797. The thing about the Pistons is they're getting better. You think they'd limp to the finish, they keep getting stronger. Bickerstaff actually had a quote last night. And he invoked the word grit.
Oh.
He said, grit, that's it. It wasn't easy. Both teams came in a little fatigued. Their style's rough, rugged, and physical. Lots of grabbing and holding. We couldn't be more proud of our guys to show resilience. We had some tired guys out there.
Sure.
Exactly. Yep.
3 games in 4 days. And, you know, two of those, the first two were on the road, back-to-back on the road, and then one at home. It's yeah, those not an easy transition for these guys.
If the Pistons make the playoffs, JB should be front runner for coach of the year, JT and Warren.
If he wins both of these games?
If the Pistons make the playoffs.
Oh, if the Pistons make the playoffs, they're going to make the playoffs.
Who should be if he's not right now? That's my...
Yeah, that's why I paused for a second. Like, who's the favorite?
I mean, OKC and I guess Cleveland maybe, you know, they have been dominant this year. Sometimes we experience that with Dan Campbell.
Right.
You know, sometimes the dominance gets overlooked with the award, but.
Well, the betting favorite is, I even can't remember the guy's name in Cleveland.
Oh, but Kenny Atkinson.
Yeah, Kenny Atkinson. He's the betting favorite.
Yeah.
Followed by Missoula from what I'm seeing in Boston. How's this going to work where AJ Hinch orchestrates some great turnaround, doesn't win manager of the year? Dan Campbell overcomes 20 plus injuries, wins 15 games, doesn't win NFL coach of the year. JB Bickerstaff, they will likely have the biggest turnaround in the NBA this season. I mean, from 14 wins a year ago to 32 now and counting. And I bet you he doesn't win it either. We could have, and then Todd McClellan probably joining midway through the season isn't going to win it in hockey either. We're going to have 4 outstanding coaching jobs in the city, and none of them are going to win coach of the year.
Well, I think that goes to what I was talking about in regards to the NBA fans. Now, they're few and far between these days, but waking up across the country to what is going on here. Cade was drafted, right? And he has had a relatively quiet career to this point due to injury and due to the fact that there's no support around him. Now, all of a sudden, we're talking about him as all NBA. And the argument is between second and third team, but he's going to be top 15.
I'd say that right now, the third team thing bothers me. And I think it's a sign of disrespect. Honestly, I don't think people realize what's happening here. There's a star blossoming into a superstar in front of our eyes, and people aren't paying attention to it. We had a text yesterday, and I actually thought, I can see it. He may be the second best Piston ever in the end.
In the end, that's possible.
I still think getting ahead of Isaiah, and people forget Isaiah, how skillful he was in his early days, and he changed his game kind of like Iserman did a little bit, but I think it's on a table. I'm a Cade guy, always have been. I've always seen what I thought could be if he could stay healthy, and he's mirroring a career of Matt Stafford, who couldn't stay healthy early in his career. And I actually think he'll end up being, quote, a better star than Stafford. Oh,
I think I think he might already be.
Well, but that's my point. You get a win over Boston or Denver, and now all of a sudden everybody looks and goes, oh, what's going on in Detroit? They've been so bad for so long, no one has cared. They completely checked out on the Detroit Pistons. Like, now this is a take notice moment.
Yeah, people starting to wake up to it.
It's like Cade recognized the way the game was last night and really grinded out some baskets. I was listening some and watching some because my son had practice last night, and I heard Champions say this has been a grind it out stat line tonight. And I heard another chant last night.
MVP?
Yes.
At the free throw line, I think third quarter.
Yeah.
It's becoming a thing.
That's a reach. I mean, SGA is.
No, but every team does it with their star. Texter says, get your Pistons car flags out. I actually got a tweet yesterday. Someone said, bring out the thunder sticks. Remember that era?
Yes.
If you still got them, bring them out Wednesday night against the Celtics. And one more ticket texter says, hey, the only way for the Pistons to improve is to trade Cade, signed Mike Enrico. Where's Keldon Johnson and first round picks? It's 97-1.
Pistons, winners of 7 in a row, back-to-back victories with travel in there. Those are not gimmies in the NBA, and they had to win two different ways on back-to-back days. One, an offensive showcase against Atlanta, and then last night at Little Caesars Arena, more of a rugged game with the Clippers. The Pistons are now closer to home court advantage than they are to the play-in. Look, this team is playing better. We talked about their ceiling. John and I are not predicting a playoff series win, but we think it's on the table. This team's played very well for about 2 months now. And if they're not on your radar, I get it, but I think they should be. And Wednesday night, LCA, unofficial Thunderstick night. Bring them back.
Yeah.
Biggest game in 15 years for the Pistons. Let's make it happen.
Right now, the Pistons, for a visual, you know, whenever you see those war movies and you're looking at the radar on the ship and it's got all of the circles, this is they are right now the blip that's on the maybe outermost ring, maybe inner, you know, first or second ring, and you get a win against Boston or Denver. Now all of a sudden, across the country, you're in the center of that radar. You are on the map.
They weren't the only team playing basketball last night.
Well, you might say they were the only team playing basketball. There was another basketball game.
Okay, you asked me, you go, how much of Michigan did I watch? And I'm like, I'm so happy that was not my focal point last night.
That was a game I turned off 10 times last night because it was the over-under on that game, the point total, 150 and a half or something like that. That was a just unbelievably hard watch last night. 49-46. They did get a win over Nebraska. And I saw the line before the game. It was like Nebraska by a point and a half.
It flip-flopped. 1.5 either way.
Yeah. But they did what they had to do, right? They got a win. It was ugly. They shot from three, from behind the arc, under 20%. 18.5%. From the field, they were 18 of 61, under 30%. And you look at Nebraska, and from the field, they were 25%. From behind the arc, they were 21.5%. Like, it was just let's just throw it up and see if it goes in. And it just wasn't.
An affront to the game of basketball. I did see the way too early bracketology, Jerry Palm, CBS Sports.
Oh, yeah.
Michigan a 3 seed right now.
Okay. I mean, that's probably a lot of respect for the Big Ten. And just looking at, you know, where they are, who was Michigan State was a 2 seed, I saw as
yep.
well.
Yep. So that's where they stand right now. 2 seed, 3 seed, Michigan, Michigan State. Again, we're still a week out from March. But I think I kind of expect them to end up around there, right?
Yeah, 3-4, mm-hmm. somewhere in there. Because, I mean, obviously they play Michigan State again.
There's going to be some other losses. And, yeah, I mean, just give people an update on it.
We'll see how they end the season. Because, as I mentioned, they have had 3 games. Now they have 2 games. Nebraska, that was on the road. They've got 2 at home, Rutgers and Illinois, to try and fix some of the turnover, get back into a rhythm of shooting. That's one thing Michigan could do, it seemed like, for a little while. Before they play a ranked Maryland and obviously in East Lansing against Michigan State.
Only other news from last night, the Red Wings made a trade. It wasn't anything like a blockbuster deal. They dumped Ville Husso's body on Anaheim, saved $3 million in cap space. Husso will expire at the end of the year. Anaheim basically just doing us a favor, traded for future considerations. And I saw the Ducks Twitter account was pretty funny. They said, we wish you well, future considerations. The only thing I'd say about it is I do think it opens up more flexibility for Yzerman to be a buyer come trade deadline day.
Sure. Do they pair that with dumping Tarasenko and really clear up some cap space for a bigger move?
Miko Rantanen,
what
baby.
What could be?
Yeah, I don't know. 248-539-9797. We're an hour away from the 2 Grand Slam. Let's get to Heather's news.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
So the Wu-Tang Clan plans to make what could very well be their last performance in Detroit this summer. They just announced they'll play at the LCA in July as part of their as part of their farewell tour. So they're calling it Wu-Tang Forever, the final chapter. Kicks off June 6th in Baltimore. They'll play here July 8th And if you want to go, tickets go on sale 10 a.m. Friday through Ticketmaster.
That's cool. Yeah. Lot of live music in the D this coming summer.
For sure. It's one of my favorite things about the summer. I mean, I typically go to Pine Knob because it's a bike ride away. Right? Yeah. Well, we don't walk. We could walk if we needed to, but we typically ride our bikes. We're the only ones that ride our bike. We have a special little spot for our bikes because they don't have a bike rack there.
Do you guys ride a tandem?
Oh my God, John, no. Can you imagine that?
Does anybody own a tandem bike anymore?
I don't know. I mean, you can rent them, but I don't know that anybody actually owns one. Mackinac Island.
Oh, yes. Well,
but that's...
I've never actually ridden one.
Oh, really?
Me neither.
No. I mean... Mackinac Island would be maybe my only chance. I mean, I don't see myself doing it at home. Anyway, other news. A now former Detroit police officer has been charged after he ran a red light and caused a fatal motorcycle accident last summer. On Monday, 28-year-old Corey Jones was charged with one misdemeanor count of moving violation causing death. Prosecutors say he drove through a red light in Roseville, hit a 26-year-old man who died at the scene. He has since resigned from the Detroit Police Department, and if convicted, he could spend 1 year in prison.
Awful.
Yeah, it's really sad. West Bloomfield firefighters jumped into action and rescued a cat from a house fire over the weekend.
Oh, good for
them. Thankfully, that's all they had to rescue. And they were able to rescue this cat because when they arrived at the home, everyone living there had already gotten outside.
Except, all the humans.
Except
living.
For the cat. Yes, right. So crews determined that there was a fire on the backyard deck. It was spreading towards the attic, and they aggressively went to work fighting the fire and searching for the cat, which sounds like they successfully found. And if you have a cat, you know that sometimes they're very hard to find because they can find the craziest hiding spots and they stay there forever. So it's good news. Very good. I mean, good news, everyone survived. Bad news of a fire, right? Yeah. Yes. There's one Michigan city that is just 5 inches of snow away from breaking its all-time snowfall record.
This is amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So according to the National Weather Service, Gaylord is 5 inches away from breaking its all-time snowfall record. So this winter so far. However, this was last Friday. And there was snow over the weekend. So these are not quite accurate, but I couldn't find.
I know. I was trying to find the snow updates
I couldn't find it. So as of last Friday, they had 180.9 inches of snow. And the record to beat is 185.6 inches.
So that got to be at least a little bit closer.
For sure. Because it snowed over the weekend. Yeah. So I couldn't find an update. So it's pretty crazy because that record was set in 2006. 2007. So, and it's been very consistent. Like, I was reading one article about how they've had snow of like measurable snowfall almost every day. It was like 86 days of the 93 days of measurable snowfall.
Good for business up there.
Sure is. Yes. A longtime NBC voice is stepping down from the network's flagship broadcast. Lester Holt. He's been the face of nightly news for a decade, and he just announced that he is stepping down, but going to go into a new role. So he's not leaving the network, but he kind of wrote a note to staff, and he explained that he wouldn't be leaving NBC for good, but he plans to kind of expand his work on Dateline in a new full-time role. But when you think of him, you think of
NBC Nightly News.
That's the face, the voice. So anyway, finally, February 28th, right around the corner, it's called Rare Disease Day, if you didn't know, and it's always held on the last day of February, and it's a day to raise awareness for rare diseases, improve access to treatment and medical representation for those with rare diseases and obviously their families as well. And if you go, you can go check out our socials as well as the Lions, and you can see a little girl's story. Her name is Morgan. She's a young girl who's been diagnosed with this rare genetic disorder. She's only one of 750 children in the world that's been diagnosed with this disorder. You can go and read a little bit more about her and her story and this potential new treatment that could save her life. So just be aware of the day on Friday and go check out Morgan's story.
Yeah.
It's Heather with the news. Coming up next, the biggest drama in Detroit sports right now, and nobody's talking about it. We'll get to it next, 97.1. If you're injured in a car accident, you need help, and you need someone who cares about you. It's KG Law. A lot of these personal injury types, they see you as a number, not Lawrence KG. He built his business with a loyal staff. They've been there from the start. I've met those people, and they're not going to cut corners.
They care about you, and they win. The phone number, 877-KG-CARES. Check them out, kgcares.com. If you or a loved one has been injured in a car accident, you need to call KG Law now. Visit kgcares.com. That's K-A-J-Y, kgcares.com. The biggest drama in Detroit sports, and no one's talking about it. It's not on the court. Our basketball team's great. I mean, I guess there's a little intrigue about what the hockey team will do with the deadline, but I don't think there's a lot of drama with the Wings right now. We're going to see how they play out of the break. And we're too early for any Lions drama. The biggest drama right now in Detroit sports is what's going to happen with the Tigers' starting rotation. Casey Mize pitched over the weekend.
Look good.
Velo was up throwing 97, 98. His splitter looks rejuvenated.
Yeah, splitter was in the 90s as well.
Yep. Kenta Maeda, Velo up, swing and miss. Veteran player, got to have it bounce back year. And then there's Jackson Jobe. Three guys for two spots. You want to throw Montero in there? Fine. But there's only two spots because Jack Flaherty's back. You got Scooble, you got Flaherty, and you've got Reese Olson. So, John, it's the story no one's talking about. Who will the Tigers starting five be? And could Joe potentially start the year either in the bullpen or in Toledo?
It's a great question because we saw him last year and they put him in pivotal position in the postseason.
No kidding.
I mean, it was unbelievable what they did in Houston and Cleveland with him. And I am curious to their theory on how they want to bring along a guy that they believe will eventually be an ace for this team. They've obviously got Scooble, they've got Flaherty, they've got Olson. We know who the top three are. You've already talked about those guys. I think the bigger question is, one, how does Maeda and Mize continue to look throughout, you know, spring training? Do they pitch the same way that we saw them pitch over the weekend? If that's the case, I think we could see him in the bullpen. I think it's more likely that we see Jackson Jobe in AAA. And it's not because he's not good enough to be in the major leagues. It's because everybody knows, and A.J. Hinch, this Scott Harris, they all know somebody's going to get hurt.
Yeah,
somebody's going to miss time.
They need six, probably seven starters to get through 162 games. That's baseball.
How many times did we see Matt Manning come up and down last year? Like, it's going to happen. And they talked about him as well. We think he's our sixth starter, but he's going to start in AAA because we just don't have enough roster spots. I think Jobe could be in that same spot, along with Montero. Montero was kind of pivotal last year.
They're going to get contributions from all of them. But I just think it's interesting to see what they do for the opening day roster. It's a numbers game, not just, hey, five starters. It's a numbers game for Jackson Jobe. I think this organization thinks the world of him, but I also don't think they don't want to put him in harm's way either. They want to be sensitive to a young arm who has yet to throw 100 innings in a season. Skeens last year was like 133, 134, something like that. I don't know that Jobe's throwing more than Skeens, and Skeens didn't make his first major league start until May. So you got to ask yourself, what's the best way? I want Jobe throwing those innings end of the season more than I want him to throw those innings early and then have to be weaned off and play this game later. I think it makes sense for him to begin the season in the bullpen where he can throw one to two innings and ramp up, and all of a sudden you get to May and, hey, if Maeda's pitching great, fine, but if he slips or someone gets hurt, insert Jobe. And now I've managed his innings to start the year. I ramp him up as the year gets going, and I hope I get a Skeens-like impact where he wins Rookie of the Year.
That is, to me, that seems like the most likely, the most logical move for the Tigers to make. Save any injury from now until, and don't forget, if Maeda and Mize start out, I mean, when does Cobb come back?
That's a great point too.
Because he will be a part of the equation once he is healthy again. So are they going to use Maeda and just say, you know what, hey, give us your best stuff for as long as you possibly can. And when you can't anymore, or Mize, the same thing, we've got Cobb waiting in the wings, and maybe Cobb comes in, Mize goes down. Now you got Mize, Jobe, and Montero in AAA. And does Mize eventually, you know, move to the bullpen? and when Cobb comes back. Like, there's a lot of different things. Or do they have Kenta Maeda be that what they tried to do with him later in the season when it was clear they didn't want to start off with a six-run first inning. And they put Maeda...
like a piggyback.
Yeah. Hey, we'll bring you in sometime second, third. And we need three, four... We need you as an innings eater.
Face the bottom of the order. Get some gimme outs. Get some innings. Look, we saw them be incredibly creative a year ago. But it sounds like the strength of this team will be at starting rotation. They've got the horses to run a five-man rotation. Honestly, they got enough guys to run a six-man rotation. What do you anticipate happens with the starting rotation come opening day? 248-539-9797. Look, it's do or die for Casey Mize. He's a former number one pick. I think he knows his career hangs in the balance, kind of like Torkelson. And if he comes out and pitches well in the spring, he should be in the starting rotation. Then it's about Maeda and Job and juggling innings and doing this strategically. Last year, they had seven pitchers start 10 or more games. They're going to need all of them. Mm-hmm. Throw in Cobb, and yeah, they probably do have seven arms. But I think Job should start in the bullpen.
Oh, you think he should start in the bullpen?
Yes.
Not in AAA?
No, the bullpen. Ramp him up, get a major league experience. I'm not worried about service time. If he's as good as they say he is, he'll finish in rookie of the year. They'll get draft pick compensation. He may even be super too. So I'd have him up here starting on the opening day roster, but coming out of the bullpen.
It'll be interesting because, as you mentioned, it's going to be about having your best rotation. Now, obviously, you've got to win enough games early to make it matter later. But when things get really tight in the second half of the season, you want to have a flamethrower like a Jackson Job.
Yep.
And you want to have him available not just in August or September, but hopefully you're able to utilize him in October as well.
Well, how about this?
Unless I get carried away, but...
But let's use Skeens as an example. You know, Skeens' best month last year was his final month. The month of September, Paul Skeens had a 0.75 ERA. And that is the comp for Job, right? You say flamethrower, swing and miss, young arm, power arm. We just saw it a year ago with the Pirates. I think that's kind of the goal for Job is get him over that 100-inning threshold. Don't burn his arm out at 150-plus innings.
Right.
But bring him along, get his best stuff at the end of the year, peaking at the right time.
So the question then is, do you want to nickel and dime him at the beginning of the year coming out of the bullpen, or do you want to let him go down to AAA and continue to develop, continue to dial in the entire, you know, arsenal that he has, and then when he comes up, he hits the ground running?
I would default to Chris Fetter on what would better prepare a pitcher. But I like the idea that he'd get to see major league hitters from the jump because the swing and miss stuff, you have to know what's going to play at the major league level. It's a completely different game when you get up to the bigs. Ticket text and phone calls, 248-539-9797. Texter says, why not have a six-man rotation? A lot of teams have that to give starters extra rest, gives you long inning guys in the bullpen.
Well, first of all, I mean, you could do it however you want. If you got six up, I still want Scooble pitching every five.
Yeah, right. So
that's why you don't do it.
That's why you don't do it. Right. Exactly. I mean, you can't do both.
Why do I want to get less Scooble, less Flaherty? No, I want those guys throwing every fifth day.
I mean, you might do that in a pinch in the summer, dog days, doubleheader stacking up, something, some sort of combination there, whatever. You know, I think AJ gave Scooble an extra day off last year at some point that we were a little critical of or something. But look, he's managing his horse. So I would prefer Job starts down, unless he just is lights out in the spring. I just think it's just an opinion in the end here. Who knows what's right or wrong, really, to start in the bullpen here or to do your normal routine in Toledo as a starter, right? I don't know what the answer to that is.
Is there any world where he comes in and dependent? Let's just play this game. Maeda, Mize, they look like they did this past weekend throughout all of spring training. Is there any world where he just simply beats out Casey Mize to start the season?
Yeah, because I think Mize blows and Job blossoms.
That's how you really feel.
Okay. I'm saying as I think there's a chance that could happen.
Right. I think history tells us that's who Casey Mize is. But if he looks the way that he did on Sunday, and he looks that way all spring, Is there any way that Jackson Job just simply, hey, we've got a flamethrower, we're not going to hold back, we know he can just go out there and win games for us, let's just go with Jackson Job?
Well, the six-man, yeah, the six-man rotation argument is to do that. If he does that, then you're giving Job some rest throughout the season because of what Jim's saying, innings for the season. So, you know, maybe Montero takes one of Job's starts here or there. That's how you use a six-man rotation with a five-man rotation, you know, where you give them days off. I think the rotation going in will be obviously the top three, and then I think four will be Maeda, and I think five will be Mize. I think they're going to give him a shot. I wasn't taking a full personal shot at him there. It was if he blows, okay? Which he can, you know, because I'm just kind of done with both him and Torque, to be quite honest with you. I'm sick of those guys. It's put up or shut up time, and it needs to be some serious put up in the spring. And how serious can you take spring? I don't know. I'm sick of guys holding this team back. We got horses to roll with without mm-hmm. them. Just because you're number one picks doesn't mean you deserve more chances.
I think they are. That's their mindset with Torque.
Why not? Sure.
I don't know. I'm just telling you. I think if you're trying to parse and read and do all the tea leaves, I think that's what they have done by moving Colt Keith to first base with Spencer Torkelson. I don't know that they're there yet with Casey Mize, and some of it is the Tommy John, you know, and yep. the recovery and getting him back to full strength. He should be at full strength. This should be his coming out party.
I do think there's a chance he can rediscover, because after the 2 years after the surgery, usually this is the time where a guy can maybe refine himself. And there have been some guys who, you know, look at what Walker Buehler did last year. You know, he was kind of left for dead. So Casey Mize never pitched like Walker Buehler
before.
Well,
the thought here is you got Chris Fetter. If anybody can unlock Casey Mize, and it's now or never, you give him one more shot. And he looked good in his first, it's only two innings of spring training. But I think it's the big story in Detroit right now is, who's going to be in that rotation when the Tigers start the season? And is it Jackson Job? And what do you do with this phenom? 248-539-9797. We want some thoughts on that. Two Grand Slam coming up at 7:25. And coming up next, someone in the NFL wants to ban the tush push. We'll get to it. It's 97.1.
Hey, we've got some crazy times in sports coming up. March is going to be crazy. We've got opening day on the horizon. If you want to watch all these at a viewing experience absolutely built for us, the sports fan, it's at Stadium Swim, and it's located at Circa Resort and Casino. Chill in one of the six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of the massive 40-foot-tall high-definition screen. It's located at Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas and one of the most entertaining places in the world, Fremont Street. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Two Grand Slam coming up at 7:25. Your chance to win $2,000. Can you get all 10 questions right? Jim Costa, John Jansen, Heather Park, Gov and Greg behind the glass on a Tuesday. John, it's the Green Bay Packers that are complaining about the tush push. They would like to ban the play entirely. I'll let you go first.
Let me get out the violin. Let me get your box of tissue. And if you can't stop it, and I love the fact that they talk about there's no skill involved. If there was no skill involved, all the 31 other teams would be doing it and very successful at it as well. And it's just amazing to me that somebody would make this proposal and make it, you know, quote unquote, anonymous. You know, it's been reported, and you know, Green Bay, Mark Murphy has talked about this a number of different times, how he wants this play outlawed. And I get it. Like, it used to be you could not advance a runner by pushing them from behind. But if you take that and you put that rule back into effect, how many different times have we seen guys, heck, we saw, offensive linemen, we saw Penei Sewell, you know, basically, you know, pick up and throw a runner into the end zone. Like, that would then be a penalty.
Right.
So, I mean, you can't just say, well, on, you know, short yardage, you can't do this. You can't push a quarterback. The issue is they've got a unique situation in Philadelphia. They've got one of the top two or three offensive lines, It's one of the bigger offensive lines, stronger offensive lines. They also have a quarterback in Jalen Hurts, and we've seen videos from him throughout high school, throughout college, and throughout the NFL of squatting 500 pounds. He is an absolute physical freak. This is what you get in the NFL. You get physical freaks in the NFL. They just happen to have one at quarterback, and this is a situation that he excels in. They have found a way, even switching out a center. Jason Kelce is out, and all of a sudden you insert a new guy, and they still are unstoppable in this. And we all saw how Washington tried to stop it, right? They tried to jump the count, and it just wasn't going to happen. And they were told, if you continue to act like this, we're going to award the other team a touchdown. There are a lot of different ways you can try and stop this. It is very hard. You know the best way to stop it?
What?
Don't allow them into third and short.
Oh, there's
Don't
that.
Don't allow them down on the goal line, fourth and short. Like, do your work earlier so you don't get into that situation.
Easier said than done. There's always going to be a short yardage play or two, and it's a game of inches. But I would be in favor of banning this if everybody was doing it and everybody was converting it and it was just a boring, dumb play. But the only team doing it is Philadelphia. Therefore, it does take skill. Therefore, it should be a play that stays in the game.
Just because one team can do it and no one else can't. I think that's the ultimate reason to keep it.
Yes. Again, if it's an automatic first down, which is what the Packers contend, why aren't you guys doing it? I mean, am I stupid here? Like, if I ran an NFL team and this was truly a play that you could get any five offensive linemen and any old quarterback and you could convert it damn near every time, every team, all 32, should be doing it. If we reached that point, then I would understand where they're coming from. We're not at that point.
Well, Green Bay has a fairly athletic quarterback, right? He seems like a strong kid.
Did you see the video that we're posting yesterday, him tripping over himself at...
Well, yeah, the ball wasn't snapped. There's a lot of different things that were going on in that. Yes,
but people are dunking on the Packers because they look like whiny babies right now.
And they are. There's no way around it. If you're going to complain about this, one of the most short yardage and goal line is where that's where men are made. And if you're going to complain about it and you can't be physical enough to stop them or you can't find the answer to something that someone is doing, I mean, that's the simple solution. Find an answer. And there might not be one in that situation. You might not be able to stop them. So prevent them from getting into that situation or live with the fact that they're going to convert third and fourth and short.
As the kids would say, it's a skill issue.
Is that what the kids say?
Yeah. Skill issue.
Skill issue?
Yeah.
I've never heard that.
Oh, okay. You just tell them to play better. Get good. If you don't like it, then play better. I mean, that's what this comes down to.
I mean, are we now going to say, well, for Philly, boy, they have this tush push. They can also rush with four. You can't rush with just four. I mean, that's how stupid this is. Like, they're really good. We can't block their front four, so we have to outlaw it because no one could stop it.
Is there anybody that wants it banned other than the whiny Green Bay Packers? Than soccer mom Karen and Green Bay?
It is, and I'm sure there's going to be people out there that are, they're going to play the, oh, well, Jalen Hurts or the insert any quarterback could be hurt if a running back pushes him from behind. You're right. He's playing the game of football. He could be hurt on any one of the other 82 plays that he plays.
I did see some people say they'd like the defense to also be able to push their teammates.
You can.
So then just do that then. That's the counterbalance, right?
It turns into a rugby play. Line up your it does. It's a scrum. So here is where I think there's great skill involved. First of all, snapping a ball between your legs and starting every play one-handed is not an easy thing to do. I'm talking about the center. And now all of a sudden, you line two or three 300-pounders plus one right on your head and one on each shoulder pad. And you snap that ball and you try and stay low and you try and drive. That is not an easy skill to master. It is a miserable skill. It's a terrible position to be in. It hurts like hell. But you know what feels really good? Is knowing that team, I'm so good at what I'm doing, that team can't stop it. And that's where it all starts. It starts at the center position. And then both guards, they hunker in there, they get low, and they drive their feet. This is football 101. If you have ever played peewee football, middle school football, high school football, hey, short, choppy steps, low pad wins, this is what we all were taught as young football players.
I'm with you. 248-539-9797. You guys saw the tush push. You saw Philly use it. Saw him win the Super Bowl. Do you have an issue with the play? The Packers want to ban it. It started as an anonymous team. Dots were connected. It was reported Green Bay was sounding the wambulance. They don't want this play in football anymore. Like, John, I could hear them out if it was being abused by everybody or if teams were running it four straight times. Like it turned into a game of rugby where they're getting 3 yards, 3 yards, 3 yards, three yards. And it's the same stupid, boring, monotonous play over and over again.
Or if it led to a number of injuries. This is why they've modified the kickoff, which is kind of been a complete disaster. But if your single goal is to not have injuries, it's going to hurt, but so does playing the game of football.
Well, and screw that. I mean, at some point, you want to make it safer. This play is not dangerous. Find me the player that's gotten hurt severely from this.
That's my
guess. What? Jalen Hurts is a special QB when it comes to doing this. Nobody else can do it, and he can. Josh Allen looks kind of unorthodox and weird doing it. He's probably the next best at doing it, though. This is like taking away when Steph Curry started shooting threes from 40 feet. Honestly, guess what? He can do it. Nobody else can. Right, Jalen Hurts' physical strength is unmatched in this league as a QB.
Well, and here's where Josh Allen, okay, we look at him as a runner, as a physical style quarterback. He could do a lot of things. He can run through a brick wall. It's really hard to do that in this situation. And you talk about the skill that it takes. It's not just the center who's going to start every single play, and especially this one-handed. It's also the quarterback that has to stay in there, receive the center quarterback exchange, and then get low and drive.
Your point is it's a skilled play.
Yes, it's a highly skilled play.
And people don't think, they think of big lug-headed offensive linemen, and they don't see any skill behind it. Technique behind it would be another way of looking at it. Tom, I think that's a great comparison. Steph can do it, not everybody else can. Jalen Hurts can do it, Jordan Love can't. Sorry. 248-539-9797. Some of your thoughts. Two Grand Slams, 725. It's 97.1.